Welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast. Glad you could join me. And NBA training camps are open, and we have a lot of news to talk about. Jeff Goodman from ESPN, he's going to join me here on the podcast. We'll get to the Carmelo Anthony trade, Dwayne Wade's free agency, the Celtics, what they have to do moving forward. All that with Jeff Goodman. A little bit later on, Stephon Marbury, the former NBA star. He talked to me about his plans to potentially come back to the NBA. You don't want to miss that. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. Joining me on the podcast, a guy that covers basketball on every level, NBA, college. He has more high school kids numbers than I did in high school. He's Jeff Goodman.
That does sound a little creepy. It
was more of a compliment, though. Like you're so plugged into like the AAU high school circuit that you know, every so often I see your tweets like such and such is committing to whatever. I mean, I'm assuming you're buzzing them on their cell phone or do they use landlines anymore in the high school?
No, there are no more landlines. That's it. They don't even talk. If you haven't noticed, and you don't have kids, kids don't talk anymore.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, texting. And
have you ever Snapchatted a recruit to ask him a question?
No. My daughter tried to teach me Snapchat. I gave up. I'm like, I can only do Twitter and a little bit of Facebook. Like, I'm not one of those guys. I can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
Pick one thing. Give me Twitter. I can own Twitter, and I'm done.
I'm with you there. I'm with you. Just Twitter. I have, like, a Facebook account for, like, my 9 actual friends.
Me too.
Yeah, like, if you were friends on Facebook there. Like, this and
I'm your 10th.
Yes, you're my 10th friend on Facebook, yes. You, Mom, and my brother. It's nice. All right, this has been already a crazy week. And when I first talked to you about doing this podcast, I figured we'd spend 10 minutes on Kevin Durant and the wild week he has. And we'll get to Kevin Durant, but over the weekend, Carmelo Anthony traded to Oklahoma City. We learn on Friday that Carmelo had expanded his list of teams to include the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Cavaliers. Sure enough, Saturday, he was gone out the door. So let's start with him in Oklahoma City. Teaming up, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, that group of players. How do you think Carmelo at this stage fits into what they're doing out there?
You know, I think Russ has got to be the one that adapts more than anybody because he's got to keep people happy now. Like last year, it was the Rush show, and it had to be the Rush show, right? I mean, he had to do everything, and he did, and it was the one thing I'll say about Russ is, what does he want to do more than anything? He wants to win.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you play hard, Russ is going to be fine with you. But the moment Carmelo doesn't defend, which he doesn't now Russ doesn't do a lot of defending anymore either. But to me, you got to play with that fire. You got to play at a high level. As long as I think they're doing that, Russ will figure out how to move the ball a little bit. He's not going to be a pure point guard ever. But I think those three will figure it out because, again, you're dealing with Melo, older Melo, more mature Melo, right? He'll give up some numbers to maybe play for a title. Paul George, he's just got to get back to what he was, a two-way player.
Mm.
He's not a leader. He doesn't have to be a leader now. They can kind of lead the three of them together, almost like the Celtics did here, right, when they got KG and Ray Allen and Pierce all of a sudden became this great leader. Well, why? Because they came together and they kind of figured it out because they hadn't really done enough individually. So maybe that happens here.
I think the evolution of Carmelo gives me some optimism that he might be better than we think because the fact that he was even willing to entertain teaming up with Mike D'Antoni again told me something because, you know, that was as big a debacle as you can get between player and coach. That told me that Carmelo was willing to be a stretch four, that maybe he had more of a sense of the importance of winning and fitting in than he ever did before. That being said, you've got a lot of guys that want the ball out there. I mean, Russell Westbrook.
Three, though, but just three. And then you put, like, Robertson, who's a defender,
yes.
Jeremy Grant, who's a defender, an athlete.
I worry about Steven Adams, though. Like, Steven Adams did not take a step forward last year, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that there was just Westbrook and no shooters on the outside. I think there's more to Steven Adams. I think he can become...
Just finish. Just rebound, finish, and run the court and block shots. Like, what else does he have to do?
What kind of offense does Billy Donovan run out there? I mean, you know Billy. You're familiar with him in the college ranks. I mean, you know, Carmelo is not the stand in the corner and shoot three-pointers guy. He wants post touches.
Yep.
He wants isolation touches. Paul George wants to play catch and shoot. I'm still struggling to see what kind of offense they'll run that's effective for everybody.
That's the million-dollar question, is what does Billy Donovan do now? Whatever he's been thinking about all offseason, you've got Russ and Paul George, and you know, it's almost like plugging in KD in a sense, right? I mean, not that high end version of KD, but you've still got two dudes. Now you've got a third who's far more of a ball stopper than the other two. So how do you figure out a way to get the ball moving? I mean, he couldn't do it when it was Russ and KD. You know, what was it? It was mostly 5 seconds left in the shot clock, and you know, whoever got the ball, whether it was Russ or KD, would be jacking it up. And that's one of the reasons KD left, is because now he gets, you know, quality shots, and he doesn't have to jack up shots as the shot clock's running down. So I think that's going to be the key right now. How do you integrate Carmelo? Because I don't think, and again, I think it's a conversation with Russ. Mm-hmm. And Russ has to have a different mindset this year. And I think if he does, which he can, and then he takes over when he needs to.
I think it's fascinating because Sam Presti has done everything he possibly can to get Russell Westbrook to sign an extension. I mean, you know, he turned, and let's be real, there's virtually nothing that the Thunder gave up over the last couple of trades that they'll regret. Right. Even if this whole thing goes south, there's not a lot they'll regret. Maybe they wonder if Sabonis can turn into a decent player, but Presti's not losing any sleep over Sabonis. There's no first-round pick included in this deal, so they've set themselves up to be okay long-term, but I wonder, what does Russ wait for here? Does he sign the extension before training camp? I can tell you, they don't know. Like, they sit around looking.
Why would you if you're Russ?
Yeah.
Why would you? What's the upside if you're Russ of signing it today? Why wouldn't you wait through half the year and see how you're playing together and make sure Paul George is going to stick around? Mm-hmm. You know, to me, if you get close with Paul George, those two should be deciding together, we're staying here. Because if you're Russ, do you really want to go back to what it was a year ago? And even worse, by the way, if Paul George leaves, because Carmelo isn't going to get any better. You know, he's really best served right now as a number three or four guy looking long-term the next couple of years.
Does this mean to you that now Oklahoma City has to keep this group together past the trade deadline? Because I wondered leading up to the season before the Melo trade, if they were like in third or fourth and a good team but not a great team, would Presti pull the trigger on a deal? Now you got Carmelo, who let's assume he's going to stick around and opt into that $28 million. Does this mean you kind of have to keep the band together the whole season?
What else are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to flip Paul George? You're going to flip Russ?
I don't know what you're getting for any of these guys for half a season.
You're not getting anything for Paul George because everybody thinks he's going to L.A. ultimately. Mm-hmm. So you're not moving Russ because they would absolutely crucify Sam Presti. The fans would be finding out where he lives, mm-hmm. and it would be over for him. So I think they have to ride it out this year and see how it goes. And even if they don't have the greatest regular season, does it really matter?
Yeah.
No, it just matters what they do in the postseason.
Where do you pencil them in right now?
You know, it's funny. I was tweeting George Sedano last night, and I was saying, who's number two right now? Before D-Wade goes anywhere, and I don't know if D-Wade going anywhere is going to, you know, completely alter the pendulum of all this.
Especially on the playoffs.
Right, exactly.
He struggles in the defensive side of it in the playoffs.
So. Yes, and he sometimes struggles in the consistency in the offensive end, too. So I don't know which roster I would I think if you told me Isaiah Thomas was going to be back by the break and be close to 100%, I think I'd still take Cleveland's roster number two because they've got LeBron. They've got Tristan. They've got a lot of guys now. They're not overpowering, but they've got a lot of guys, Jay Crowder and Korver and J.R. Smith, and if they add D-Wade, there's enough there for who still is the best player on the planet with LeBron. So I would go Cleveland, and also you're in the East. Mm. So that's the one. I don't think Oklahoma City's – unless Golden State has a significant injury – to one of its big four, I don't think there's any way, whether it's Oklahoma City, whether it's San Antonio, whether it's Houston, I don't see any of them.
But do you look at Oklahoma City as being better than San Antonio and Houston right now? Because they were a 47-win team without any of these guys in the mix. You add Paul George, I thought that got him into the 50s. You add Carmelo Anthony, even at this stage, and if he buys in, again, that's the big question with Carmelo. He says he is. Let's see if that comes into practice. That's a 55, 56 win type of team. And I look at San Antonio, and Tony Parker isn't getting any younger. Is he going to be more effective?
Yep.
Houston, love the backcourt, think it's going to work fine, but they're thin up front, and I don't know where they get kind of that balance in their offense. I think Oklahoma City is the second best team in the West right now.
Talent. I agree. On paper, no question. You can't even argue with that.
Yep.
Off paper, I'll take the Spurs. I'll take Pop and Kawhi over anything else, and that culture and just the winning and how they do it and move the ball and all of that, because Oklahoma City and Houston both have potentials. I think Houston even more to be a train wreck. Mm-hmm. I mean, how is it going to work with Harden and Chris Paul?
This is where I trust D'Antoni, because offensively he can make these guys. Right. They might not play any defense.
There's enough possessions.
But yeah, they'll. Right. And plus, I think Harden saw at the end of last year just how exhausting it was being the primary and having no secondary. Yep. I think he's going to be a better player. Maybe the numbers won't reflect it, but he'll be a better player and a more productive player in the postseason with Chris Paul around. Now, with the Knicks, does it matter what they got? Is it even relevant that? I mean, they didn't have to cut him. They didn't have to cut Carmelo, which I thought they might eventually have to do. Cantor, I'm forever, and I love Enes Kanter, but I'm forever going to know him as Can't Play Kanter from with Billy on the sideline there.
Yep.
Does it matter? I mean, do you think McDermott has a future in the NBA? I mean,
I love Doug. Like, I'm the president of the Doug McDermott fan club. Like, as a kid, as a college player, he's a good piece. He's a good piece. So is Kanter. Great offensively. Maybe one of maybe the worst defensive post player in the league, or certainly right there, right? So now, you know, you got to think about Hornacek and what he's got to deal with defensively now. And they got pieces for Carmelo. Well, that's the best they could do. Everybody's going to say, well, they should have gotten more. What? What are you going to get for Carmelo? How many teams want to take on that contract? I talked to enough GMs that said to me, like, we think he's damaged goods. We're not going to take him on at that number. Because, frankly, he's not worth it. We're going to go young. We're not bringing him on. So, you know, if you're the Knicks, you turn the page. You hope Frank Ntilikina's the real deal. And
you hope that Dennis Smith is not, if you're the Knicks.
Yeah, no doubt, because you're right. And Dennis Smith is super talented. I don't know which way that's going to end up, but he was great in summer league. To me, if you're the Knicks, you've got to get free agents. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to. You probably have to tank. I mean, realistically, if you could tank this year and then get a free agent, get a top, you know, five pick and get a free agent, you're in business.
They may not have a choice when it comes to tanking. I mean, I think
there's a lot of bad teams out there, though.
You're right. And Porzingis makes you better. And if they play up tempo, they could. And that's why I think Hornacek in Phoenix was, you know, 8 seconds or less. If Mike D'Antoni was 7 seconds, he was 8 or 9 seconds or less. I can see them being up tempo. I can see them winning a few games. Playing like that. But either way, they had to do this. You can't bring Carmelo to camp, and it's a total circus. Yeah. It's just...
Well, it's like Kyrie in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Right? You had to... There was like an unofficial deadline of camp. And they made it because, frankly, they didn't want the locker room to be a mess. And they wanted Hornacek, I think, to be able to start from scratch. And let's see what we have here with some of the young guys. And as long as you have Carmelo, you're not going to get a chance to see... you know, other than Porzingis, those are the only guys you're going to be able to adequately evaluate. Now, at least you can see these other young, you know, you can see whether Tim Hardaway is worth all that money.
There's the question. The numbers for Carmelo are not good in New York. 207 and 269 in the playoffs. They lost 3 of their 4 series that they were in. I mean, do we describe Carmelo's Knicks experience as a failure?
Is it
abject failure?
How can you not?
I will, in playing devil's advocate here, I will say they never surrounded with any good players.
Phil was the ultimate failure.
Yeah.
And Carmelo was kind of a byproduct of
that. And Carmelo was on the side of the Angels last season. That was, you know, Phil.
That's right.
Phil being filled there. But at the same time, look, Carmelo battled with D'Antoni, and that was a mistake, because if he accepted what Mike was teaching, they might have been better off. He refused to change his game and evolve. So I would, you know, like, D minus, give it the D minus there.
Yeah, I'll give him. That's fine. I'll go with the D minus instead of the F. I hope. It's funny because people that don't know Carmelo, and I don't know him super well. I don't. I remember I broke his commitment years ago when I was at Fenway Park, actually.
Had his number in high school.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
AOL Instant Messenger back
probably
then.
Probably was back then. But I do think Carmelo gets a little bit of a bad rap as a human being. Like, I don't think he's a bad guy, a bad kid, or any of that. I just, you know, again, on the court it's easy because he looks selfish. He doesn't play any defense. Doesn't show a lot of emotion. So he's the easy target, and he gets paid a ton of money. But again, he's never been like an elite player. Like, he's that next tier, like Paul Pierce. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, was always the next tier. Now, Paul Pierce, again, came into a good situation now, you know, where he got KG and Ray Allen. Carmelo's best situation was early on in his NBA career.
Mm-hmm. Can Carmelo Anthony be a factor in Paul George and Russell Westbrook sticking around Oklahoma City?
Yeah, why not? Why not? I mean, if they win,
yeah,
right? If they win enough, Carmelo's probably going to be a reason why, one of the reasons why. So if they play together and they win, to me, yes, I do think that that can help keep both those guys in Oklahoma City. I just, again, I don't know if Paul George's mind is pretty much made up, if he's open to it right now. Winning solves almost everything. And if they somehow, you know, take the Warriors to seven games this year, go to the Western Conference Finals, take them to seven games, it would be hard to imagine. It'd be tough for Paul George to leave. He
and
could still do it.
That's what I always say. Like, it's one thing to say that when you're on a going-nowhere Indiana team that you want to play for the Lakers, right. It's right. One thing. It's
you know
thing,
what you're getting yourself into.
It's another right. thing to walk away from a 55-plus win team going to a conference finals. People point to Durant and him leaving Oklahoma City. Durant went to a ready-made championship.
Right.
He was an automatic champion on a different system, right. a different style. I don't know. I mean, look, it all depends
on how.
Could
George do that with LeBron and Lonzo Ball? And right, like he could have
something. And the Lakers are going to be bad. Like, they're going to be really bad.
This year. You don't think in 3 years they're one of the super teams?
It depends on who they get. And it depends.
They're going to get somebody.
It depends what Lonzo looks like, what Brandon Ingram looks like. They'll get somebody, but they're still in the West. And is it a roll of the dice for Paul George? Even if you're going with LeBron, even if LeBron says, I'm going there, Paul, you come with me. It's still a roll of the dice that LeBron, Paul George, plus two young guys that may or may not work out, are going to be able to compete. And you know this, like guys when they hit this age, 28 years old, whatever Paul's going to be at free agency, they start looking at their basketball mortality. They start wondering, all right, I got to win. I'm in my prime. I got to win. I wonder if that's how big a factor that is.
I think it will be. I think absolutely. If he thinks they can win it all in Oklahoma City, he might stay there.
Yeah.
And that's where if you're Sam Presti, like you said earlier, listen, you didn't give up anything that you can't replace.
You're basically an expansion team if everybody opts out. But
right. But you know what?
Yeah.
You take a shot,
yeah.
just like you know Cleveland's trying to do too for this year. You take your shot now. If you're a small market team, you play for the now, see what you can do, get as much talent as you can, because if not, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're sitting there in mediocrity.
Give them credit for rolling the dice.
Yep.
I mean, they're a small market team that would never have been able to get Paul George otherwise, would never have been able to get Carmelo Anthony otherwise. I can respect what they did there. All right, let's look at Kevin Durant, who just had one of the worst weeks you could possibly have. Social media, going back and forth with a fan with like 150 followers who was hitting him about leaving Oklahoma City for the umpteenth time. It sure seemed like KD's got a ghost account that he was trying to flip back and forth from. Didn't.
Yeah.
It came on his account and it got screen grabbed and the rock started rolling down the mountain from there. Look, I've covered KD for a long time. I understand.
Yeah.
And I respect him because he's always very thoughtful with his answers. He is a very articulate guy. He will think about an answer and he'll give it to you. But I just can't understand why, what are we, 15, 16 months after his decision to leave Oklahoma City, why he's still thinking about this, why he's still answering. He's never going to get these Twitter bots from
Nobody
stopping
would.
To
right.
to hit him. It's going to happen for the rest of his career. People that are angry. Why does he even? Why do you think he still thinks about this? Because I reported last week that there, you know, look, nobody's pissed at him in Golden State, but there are teammates and there are people in the organization that are just bewildered by his behavior.
This?
By just yeah. by why you do why you just won a championship. This should be the best summer that you've had. Why are you clapping back at some twit bot?
Maybe Draymond's rubbing off on him a little bit or something. Who knows?
I don't even think Draymond does it to that extent.
No, you're
though.
Right.
Like, I mean,
you know, it's funny. A year ago, I asked Kevin in Vegas, and I said, you know, when he made the decision, I said, how much do you want to be liked? And he looked at me. He's like, I don't care about being liked by anybody other than, you know, the typical answer you get from most people. The only people I care about are the people close to me. I don't believe it because, like, if I said it, it's not true. Like, you want to be liked. Now, I don't mind being hated by some people. I don't think Kevin minds being hated by some people. But he's also one, he's not a guy who goes out and parties. He's home a lot. He's a homebody. So I do think he's home, checking Twitter, just being like you and I, like just a regular dude who's just a great basketball player. And he is a really good kid. I mean, he is. I think most people would say that. Like, he's fought some people over the years lately, starting in Oklahoma City. I think he started to kind of go at the media a little bit. But I think ultimately, To me, Kevin Durant's just a different guy than a lot of these other NBA guys, and he is. He's on Twitter. He's going back with people. I wouldn't suggest it, but I do it, and you do it, and everybody does it for the most part. It takes somebody really focused not to be able to do that, right? Not to be able to go back on Twitter. And how many other you think athletes have these fake accounts?
Oh, plenty. Every one of them.
That's what I'm saying.
Every one of them, yeah.
So he didn't switch it, probably. Yeah, probably. I mean, we don't know that for sure, yeah. But he didn't
switch
it. We
all talk in the third person all the time.
Right, exactly. So, like, yeah,
Chris Mannix thinks this podcast is going really well. But Kevin Durant won the battle. Like, Kevin Durant, you know, he's saying, like, just be done. He took the easier path to a championship, yes, but he's not a bandwagon jumper. He was the finals MVP. I've maintained since the finals, they don't win a championship. They don't beat Cleveland unless they have Kevin Durant. That's how good Cleveland was in that series. Even getting beat 4-1, Cleveland was really good, especially the last three games of that series. He's won, you know. Take your victory. Don't worry. I mean, I think what we know now is that we
easier said than done these days.
But we are always we understand now that Kevin Durant is never fully going to be able to let go of leaving Oklahoma City. That there will always be at least a little bit of regret that he did it. And he said as much in some interviews, the Modern Luxury, the San Francisco magazine, he talked about being at rock bottom in China. He had a little bit of regret then. I think he's had a little bit of regret now, and that's never going to go away.
Again, I think he wants to be liked deep down, and I think it's hard for him because he's always been liked. His entire life, he's somebody who everybody kind of heaps praise on. And then all of a sudden, you go from this guy that gets vilified by a segment of people. And it's a small segment, but they're all on Twitter, and they're all coming at you. And finally, you're sitting home one day, and you got nothing to do, and you're on Twitter, and you're like, the hell with it, you know. I'm going to go back at him. And you forget to switch your account. And next thing you know, and I give him credit. Like, he didn't go up there and say, hey, my account was hacked. That's what I probably would have done.
Nobody would have believed that.
Nobody would have believed it, but people do it anyway.
Yeah. It's usually like sexting that they say that's the hack.
You know, that, right? Yeah,
clearly. I mean, I've said it like three times on Twitter that I've been hacked. Any of the stuff that Durant's done this summer, and I point out the Under Armour slight to Steph Curry, which I know Steph had a bit of an issue with. The sneakers, soles with the writing on it, now this. Any of it carry over? Or does it all just kind of dissipate now that we're into training camp?
Again, I think because Draymond is on that team, he's fine. If Draymond wasn't on that team, I think people might be looking at him like, what the hell is he doing, even Steph? But I think those guys are all – I mean, Steph's elite in terms of character. Klay doesn't care about anything, right? I mean, Klay just says two words and he's done. So I think it's fine. And really where it matters is in that locker room. And Kerr can handle anybody. So I think they'll be fine as long as they win. And even if they don't win early, like, it doesn't really matter. All that matters for them is winning another title. But I think KD will be fine.
Which they are prohibitive favorites. This has been one of the best off seasons I can remember. I mean, you and I are sitting here at Boston's training camp media day talking about a deal that just happened over the weekend before a major deal. But you get into the regular season, and would it surprise anybody if Golden State opened up 26-3 and rolled?
No.
I mean, they might have gotten a little bit deeper with some of the acquisitions they made this offseason, Nick Young among others. It's a fun offseason.
Fewer off nights. Like they can't have off nights as often as they could have.
But they'll get even more rest now because of the stretching of the schedule. Yep. I think we're headed to another strong Golden State season. One more thought about Golden State. Here's how it went. They said, we don't want to go to the White House. The president disinvited them to go to the White House. There are two schools of thought on the White House visit with a polarizing president. One, don't go and make a statement that way. Second, and I've heard NFL players say this, go and speak your mind to the president. Say, you know, these are where my issues are. I'd like to address these with you face to face. Where do you fall on that? Like, which side of the aisle?
Man, that would take some cojones to go there. I guess if you do it the right way. But
I think Draymond Green's got those. I think he. I
he
think
would,
he. I
he
think
would
he
love
could,
to do it.
I think
it?
He could stand in front of Donald. I think David West could stand in front of Donald Trump and say things like that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's like you said, I mean, it's incredible. You know, I put something out there. North Carolina isn't going to the White House, and everybody, like, blasted him right away. And then, you know, I talked to a spokesman from Carolina. He said, we just couldn't find a date that works. Mm-hmm. You know, college players are obviously different. NBA players speak their mind. They don't. The most incredible thing for all this for me is the fact that so many athletes come out publicly right now and are going at the president of the United States. Like, did you ever in a million years think that could, like, Chris, did you ever think one person would ever do that on social media or whatever, that you could come out and go at the president of the United States? It just, it shows where our country is, like, come to right now. It's scary. It's sad.
I remember in Boston when Tim Thomas with the Bruins decided not to go to see Barack Obama, and that was a huge deal.
Huge.
At the time. Now you have franchises, college teams electing not to go. I'm glad they're not, and even if they were invited, I was assuming they would have said, I'm not going to go, because I don't like the optics. I mean, if they go and it's just sort of like the look on their face is like, I don't want to be there, doesn't that just extend the story? Doesn't it mean, like, you know, and what if half the team or three quarters of the team doesn't show up? What if it's just Joe Lacob and, like, Bob Myers?
Yeah, it doesn't look good for anybody.
Team? It's just a bad look. Just walk away and end the story. Now, our president's not determined not to end the story. And you know, he takes some offenses. He was quick to point out that the Penguins are going to the White House. So
the LeBron tweet was incredible, Chris.
You bum is now up there with every, like, other.
Might be the most. Honestly, when you read that, like, how shocked were you?
Right to the point.
Didn't you, like, the first thing I did was make sure it was LeBron's real account.
Yep.
Right? Isn't that first thing? Like, I can't believe he did this. Exactly. Something. Some fake account, because you're looking at it saying, I can't believe he did this. And now I think it just opens the door for anybody else in the NBA, because once LeBron does it, it's kind of open for anybody.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let me finish with this. We're here in Boston, and I've done a lot of Celtic stuff over the last few weeks and Kyrie, the trade, but you're someone that's covered Jason Tatum extensively over the last few years. And, you know, look, Boston was very clear about how excited they were on draft night. They believed that he was their top guy on their board. At least that's what they say. And we'll take them at their word for the moment. Give me just your assessment of Jason Tatum, and also how NBA ready is he to play on a team that has aspirations to get to the finals this year?
Yeah, no, he's ready offensively. I mean, he's going to be, to me, Paul Pierce, Carmelo. He could be at that level.
Wow.
He will be a good number three guy for the Celtics behind Kyrie and Gordon Hayward fairly quickly, like in a year. I really think he can be a number three guy in a year. He's so skilled, special offensively. His step back is so sweet. He's got an arsenal of moves that he can kind of go to. You know, the key for him is going to be defensively, and they need defense on this team right now. I mean, mm-hmm. You brought in Kyrie for Isaiah. We'll call that an upgrade. I'm not sure how much of an upgrade it is, because neither are great defensively.
Yeah.
But you lost some toughness in defense, and the other part of this now is, so you lose Avery, you lose Jay, and Marcus Smart has dropped 20 pounds. And most people would say, that's great, Marcus Smart dropped 20 pounds. I'm not so sure, because you can't put him on LeBron now.
Yeah.
Even for a couple minutes, you can't put – like, now he'll look like Avery Bradley, which is fine. He can guard certain guys. But the beauty of Marcus Smart defensively was he could switch 1-4 because he was so tough and big and strong. So defensively is where I kind of worry about this team.
Didn't he need to lose that? I mean,
I don't know.
I remember him fading. Remember how he faded? He faded when he had an opportunity with Isaiah out. He had a great game in game three. Yeah. Great game. And then a day and a half later, he faded. I think a lot of that had to do with stamina and not being able to, not having the physicality or be able to withstand playing 35 minutes, defending at a high level and doing all those things.
Could be.
Plus, contract year. Come on.
Yeah.
Contract year players.
Listen, I'm with you. No, he's going to get paid.
16-8, he's going to average you because it's a contract year. Like, it's,
I don't know if he'll average that.
I'm just saying.
But he'll be. I can't wait to see how effective he is defensively, because now you don't have as much, right? I mean, now the pressure's on Jaylen Brown to be this elite defender. And we saw him do it for 2 minutes in a stretch against LeBron, and everybody thinks now, like, Jaylen Brown, let's anoint him as the next Avery Bradley. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty hard to do. Like, he's still in year two. And to me, he hasn't really proven anything yet, and everybody's saying, you know, how great Jaylen Brown is. To me, Jason Tatum, they're very different. Tatum's upside is much higher. offensively? What do you want in the game these days? You better have versatile forwards. And oh, by the way, Jason Tatum can move the ball too. Mm-hmm. He can. Like, he's far more skilled than people realize. So I think when you eventually have Kyrie at the best player, Hayward at the two, Tatum the third best player, and then the key for this franchise, and I'll say it over and over, the key is the Lakers this year.
Yeah.
Because if the Lakers fall 2-5 and the Celtics get that pick, this draft is loaded with good bigs, or front court guys, forward, however you want to say it, and Luka Doncic being 6'7", 6'8", he's not really a front court guy, but between Marvin Bagley, Michael Porter, DeAndre Ayton, and Doncic, those are four guys that, to me, could all be the number one pick. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could change this franchise in terms of adding another guy, and then you've got four. You've got four dudes that you can grow with, of which in 3 years, Gordon Hayward is what, 30, yep. 31? You know, Kyrie's 28. And then you're ready in 3 years to win it all, potentially.
Don't you love the number of Marvin Bagley fans that came out of the woodwork in like late August? Like, oh, we got to get Marvin Bagley. I love social media.
And nobody's seen him.
Don't give up the Nets pick. You got to get Marvin Bagley. Like, if you put him in a lineup, people, would you know who he is?
And the NBA hasn't seen him.
No.
That's the crazy part of Marvin Bagley, because he reclassified and he was hurt and whatever it was last year, the Adidas Nations. NBA people haven't even really seen him. I've seen him a ton. Mm. And he is talented. He and Porter, to me, are like franchise.
But he could turn out to be Harry Giles, like the uber talented amateur with the injury. I'm just saying, like, but nobody really, they don't know. People that are obsessed with
the
picks.
No, you don't know. And that's why, again, to me, if that Lakers pick becomes one that's got a lot of value this year, can you then get another veteran who can maybe help you this year? Potentially at the break. Everybody's obviously, what are they? Anthony Davis. I just don't think they have enough to get Anthony Davis now. I think if you had both of those picks, then maybe you could have gotten.
You don't think
Anthony
like
Davis.
A Tatum Brown two maybe. Pick in the draft? I mean, maybe. Look, I've said it's going to take the greatest package ever to get Anthony Davis out of New Orleans. But if
it can't be the number one overall pick, how can you give up Anthony Davis if you're not going to get the number one pick? Right?
Unless Tatum looks like a flat-out star in his first year.
And he's not.
He's not.
He's
not
going to. It's going to take a little bit of time. And same thing with Jaylen Brown. He's not going to put up 15 points a game. So I don't think those guys are going to have enough value that they're going to trade Anthony Davis for. I think you can get another veteran potentially for that pick and a Jaylen Brown or something like that. That can help you, and then you're in business.
We're not allowed to talk Anthony Davis on this podcast anymore. People in New Orleans get very mad.
Do they?
At me when, I get a lot of backlash from the New Orleansites. Is that how you say it? Whatever down there.
Yeah, I think Anthony Davis will be there. I don't think they...
Long term?
Well, not long term.
Next 3 years.
What's his contract?
He's got 3 years, literally from this season.
Yeah, I think he'll be there too. And then in the third year, if they're not making progress, and it probably depends on what Bogey does after this year.
Yeah.
You know, does he bolt? And then you're left with Anthony Davis and a bunch of average players again. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you quickly. We're here at Media Day, and while we'd like it to be Kyrie and Gordon Hayward fitting together, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, this Media Day and every other Media Day is going to be about protesting next year. We already are seeing statements trickle in. I got one from Vivek Ranadive last night. Tom Gores with the Pistons has weighed in. By the time this podcast comes out on Tuesday, I'm sure there'll be even more. What do you expect NBA player reaction to be to all this? I mean, we still have weeks to go till the first preseason game, so maybe things quiet down a little bit. But how do you expect NBA players, mostly African-American, to react?
I remember last year, I thought, I can't remember who it was, but after the Kaepernick stuff, I had heard a lot that one player wasn't going to come out of the locker room. And I can't remember who it was now, but it'll be interesting to see if players stay in the locker room, if they kneel down. I heard a stat that I think the percentage of African-American players in the NBA is like 74%. Mm-hmm. In the NFL, it was actually higher than I thought. It was 70. So I don't know. I mean, they're more recognizable, right? I mean, NBA players are far more recognizable. I think they've got more juice, and they know that. So will they do something as a unit? I think they're a tighter knit. The NBA is far more tighter knit than the NFL. Mm-hmm. These guys played against each other in AAU ball. They know each other. They're hanging out with each other in the offseason. I don't think that goes on in the NFL. So these guys could come together and be more likely to hold some sort of unified protest than the NFL.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's more likely that they go in the locker room. Maybe you have a player or two take a knee, but I can see the horn going off, guys running back into the locker room and then coming back out so to make a statement, but maybe not a scene in a lot of but this is going to be the story all
week.
Yeah,
for the first, you know, it'll be the story for preseason and opening night.
Right.
And then I think it'll get down to playing.
Which wasn't the story at all. Which, you know, we had a president that didn't take shots at African-American players for the most part. Anyway, Jeff, I know you're busy, man. Appreciate you taking the time to join me as always.
Always good. And build up those Facebook friends. All right. Try to get try to get it to 20.
Two social media accounts. Go Snapchat high schooler. My thanks to Jeff Goodman for joining the show. And now, my conversation with former NBA player, Stephon Marbury.
Joining me on the pod right now is a familiar name in NBA circles, and nowadays even more familiar name in Chinese basketball circles. Stephon Marbury is a former high draft pick, a former NBA All-Star. He has been playing for the last 8 years over in China since leaving the NBA in 2009. He joins me here on the pod. Steph, how are you, man?
I'm blessed. How are you?
I'm good. You know, there's a lot I want to get into here with you, but when I was starting to prep for this interview, it really shocked me that it's been, you know, 2009, 8 years since you last played in the NBA. I mean, you're such a familiar name to so many people. Does it feel that long to you since your last NBA game?
Yeah, it has been a long time. I mean, I've been in China. This is my ninth season here. So, you know, if you look at 9 years in the NBA, some guys don't even make it that long to play in the NBA.
For people that aren't as familiar with your story as others, when you finished your season in Boston, what were your options at that time? What were you thinking about the next step of your career right after that season ended?
Well, I wanted to play in Boston. I wasn't granted the opportunity the way how I would have liked, but I thought Boston was a really good fit for me. Although, you know, I didn't play as much as I would have liked, but I still had the opportunity to learn and to be able to be in an opportunity to play with some amazing players. But at that time, I mean, I really wasn't really thinking of much other than playing in Boston. And then when that didn't happen, you know, China came up.
Who first suggested China?
So that's a long story, but at the end of the day, my wife was basically like, well, you know, you can't lay in the bed and you can't go through this whole process of depression as you are. You got to do something. And, you know, I basically got up out of the bed during that time. You know, I was dealing with a lot and I was dealing with so many different things at the time. And, you know, I made the decision to go and do something.
If you didn't go to China, do you think you would have played basketball ever again?
To be honest, I don't know.
Did you have other options at that time?
I mean, there's always options because I was still able to play and I still was young. But at that time, you know, I wasn't really indulging into the options of me being able to play.
How big a culture shock was it for you in the first weeks and months being over there?
You know, it was the first 2 weeks was really trying because I couldn't speak the language. I couldn't understand. The food was completely different. But, you know, as time took its course, you know, as anything, you just start to adjust.
And you've written about this a little bit, and I've seen you say it before, but the practice schedule in China is so much different than the practice schedule in the NBA, isn't
completely
it?
Completely different. If you told an NBA player that they had to do what they do in China, there's no way it will happen. No way. Especially if, you know, you've never experienced that type of training before. It's completely different from what we know.
Was it a good thing for you?
To be honest, it was the best thing for me. You know, at that time, it helped me evolve and it helped my game. It changed my game and the way how I prepared.
How do you keep yourself from not getting exhausted, though, with that type of, what, mornings and afternoons, double session type stuff?
I mean, I can't even... There's no not keeping yourself from being exhausted because you're always exhausted. But, you know, as I said before, you know, you really need this type of training. You know, it's just it has to be constructed in a way that will be beneficial because, you know, here there aren't any TV timeouts. There aren't any referee timeouts. So the game isn't as long as it is in the NBA. You know, for CBA, you have to actually really be in shape in order to play at a high level and to also play here. If you're not in shape, you know, you're basically doing yourself an injustice to come in here and playing basketball. You won't really make it.
How did you get over the communication issues? Because not just communicating during a timeout, but as a point guard, you've got to be a communicator on the floor, right? How did you deal with the language barrier?
Well, basketball is a universal language, and, you know, I had a translator, but more importantly, you know, we fed off of each other as far as the things that we needed to do on the court. When you make a mistake, you know when you make a mistake. You can basically use sign language as far as showing visuals of what needs to be done on the defensive end or rebounding or taking a shot. You know, you can do all of those things without knowing that language.
How does the crowd support the fan experience compared to what you saw in the NBA?
Well, in the fourth quarter, that's when the NBA comes alive. Here, they're in the game throughout the whole time. You know, as soon as the game starts, it's kind of like, you know, you watch the, you know, I use the Dukies as an example. You know, the Dukies in the stands, they go crazy the whole time from the first time you take the shot all the way up into the last play. You know, that's pretty much how it is. It's that type of atmosphere.
When did the point come, Steph, that you started to really like playing over there?
You know, I was sitting down with Maurice Taylor. We were playing in Jinsu. It was towards the end of the year, and we were sitting on the floor, and we were stretching. And he was like, so do you like it? And I was like, you know what? I really do like it. I like the fans. I like how, you know, the game is changing. I like being someplace globally where, you know, there are the most basketball players on the planet. I mean, as you know, there are over 300 million plus people registered on Wikipedia where people can check, excuse me, where people can actually check and see, you know, how many people are playing basketball here. And during that time when I was in the realization of, you know, how the game was growing and how it was changing, I thought that, you know, it was a great platform for me to continue to build on.
You know, there are so, as you said, so many Chinese basketball players playing over there, but so few guards that have gone from the Chinese system into the NBA. I was talking to one, Guo Ailun, who was playing over here for a couple of months this summer. And one of the things he was talking about was how in China, team skills are emphasized, but individual skills are really not. Have you noticed that it's more team than individual skills being emphasized there?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, he's dead on with that. I think the individual play has to continue to grow. I think with the way how they train here is definitely for the team. But more importantly, Chinese basketball league is more geared towards picking the best players out of the league to participate in the Olympics. That's their championship. That's their that's their stage. Whereas, you know, we have the NBA Finals. They have the Olympics to look forward to. So all of the players that play in the CBA, those guys are the best guys are picked to play for the national team. So when you have this type of setting, it's completely different.
Do the young guys that you play with over there talk to you, ask you questions about what it takes to play in the NBA?
They don't talk to me about that. I teach them. I talk to them about, you know, what they need to do to become better basketball players. There's one thing that I do have, and that's a lot of experience. And I feel like I'm a better student of the game than I am a basketball player.
Have you seen, over the last 8 years, I guess, the skill level rise in the Chinese Basketball League?
Definitely. It's growing. It's getting bigger. It's a slow progress. It's like everything that they're doing globally all over the world. You know, I try to tell people all the time, you could buy Chinese food everywhere. You don't even think about asking somebody to say, oh, do you want to have Chinese takeout? So it's a slow progress. It's slow progress. You know, in basketball and all of the things that they're doing.
Did you ever think you'd have statues of yourself in China?
Never. Never.
Do you have a statue of yourself in Coney Island?
Right, exactly. You said statues. People don't even realize there are statues.
Plural.
And, you know, for me, it's, you know, I'm deeply humbled and blessed by all of the accolades that have come. And I'm so thankful for the Chinese people for accepting me and embracing me the way that they have. And, you know, I think through all of the hard work, it's all paid off.
How many times do you go and visit those statues?
Every time somebody asks to go.
Of course you'd go. Why wouldn't you? You'd want to go hang out at your statue.
Hey, it's a beautiful thing, man.
How disappointed were you when Beijing terminated your contract?
I wasn't disappointed at all. I was just more hurt. The fact that I wanted to continue my career, but at the end of the day, I understand the business. So because I'm 40 years old, you know, I understand the rebuilding process. My relationship with Shogun is still the same. It's just part of the business. It's something that happened, but you know, luckily, there's another Beijing team, so I had the opportunity to be able to stay in Beijing. So, you know, it's all good.
The idea of playing in the NBA, once again, how serious are you about getting one more crack at the NBA?
I mean, I said it, so it's not a how serious, is that's what it is. I mean, I think for me, you know, playing in the NBA my last year, it's important. Because it gives the fans and the people who have supported me throughout all of my years of playing basketball to be able to see me one last time. You know, I have the opportunity to play on two sides of the earth, and being able to do that and being able to allow the fans to be able to see me still able to play at a high level at 40 years old, it's a blessing.
I guess serious was probably the wrong word. I mean, how realistic do you think it is that you can play in the NBA?
Have you watched me play?
I have. I look at the numbers though, and you know, over guys over 40, very few players in the NBA ever.
I mean, how many players at my age at 38, 39 can still move like how I move and do the things that I'm able to do? There's not that many. You know, so that in itself is something uniquely different. So I think for me, playing in the NBA, that's not a hard thing to do. You know, I'm still able, I'm still capable, I'm still in shape, I'm still strong, I'm still able to move fast, I'm still able to shoot and do all of the things that's needed.
You contacted one team. I mean, what kind of interest have you received over the last few weeks?
We'll see. It's premature right now. It's something that I said that I wanted to do. It's not something that teams have said they wanted. You know, I think from the scouts and from people who have watched me play over the last 5 years, they know what I'm capable of doing. They watch. They come to all of the games. They've seen me in action. You know, right now I'm in decent shape. For September, I'm playing 32 minutes a night, you know, in preseason games that are intense. The level of competition is not the NBA, but the speed And the reaction time is the most important thing for right now in September. So by the time March comes, I think I'll be in tip-top shape. I think I'll be in the moment of how the game is being played.
The question always with guys playing in other leagues versus the NBA is, can they defend at NBA level? Do you think you can still defend at an NBA level?
I mean, when you play basketball for as long as you play, you know how to defend. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel
but
like
you
have
a guard too?
Yeah,
you still got to be able to score. If you can't score, I mean, the name of the game is put the ball in the hole. The guys who make the max contracts and the big money, they aren't the guys who know how to defend. Those are the guys who put the ball in the hole.
Do you feel like you have unfinished business in the NBA?
No.
No. Because you think if you don't play another game, you'd be happy with the way everything went?
My dude, I got statues, museums, green card, key to the city of Beijing, the most populous country on the planet. I'm good.
No, look, of course you are. Of course, you've got tremendous success.
In basketball, I've done something that no basketball player has ever done. I mean, nobody. So, I mean, I'm aware it's not a gloating thing. It's just a what happened thing.
No, of course. I mean, the success you've had globally is... I just wonder if you ever think about, you know, the KG years and doing anything differently in your career.
No, I mean, everything that I've experienced in this life has allowed me to be where I am today. All of those experiences prepared me for the now. You know, playing basketball in Minnesota, that was all part of the journey. Playing basketball in New Jersey, Phoenix, New York, Boston. I mean, that was all part of the preparation. It was, you know, all in tune and getting ready for what was needed for China. And now, here I am.
Would you ever want to play in New York again?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
That wasn't...
I think that's where the growth comes in at, my part. At being 40 years old, being able to move past difficult times and being able to see something completely different in the finishing of the book.
Mm-hmm. You know, you in China, Steph, you're able to do what so many NBA players are desperately trying to do, which is grow their brand in a basketball, as you said, basketball-crazed country. What have you been able to do with the Starbury brand in China that maybe you weren't, maybe you couldn't have done if you were in the U.S.?
Well, I'm in 5,000 stores, opposed to being in 136 stores when I was in Stephen Barry's. China has given me the opportunity now to be able to have an online presence. And now I'm in City Trends and possibly speaking with Walmart and Journey outlets and different Ross, different big major distribution channels. You know, my goal is, as it has been from the beginning, is that's to create access for all for people. You know, I only want to be able to provide and give people the access who can't afford the high-end products. Creating a valuable product for people to purchase and buy, it has significant value. It's a win-win situation. I feel like we have a social conscious ability. I mean, how should I say it? We should have a social connection with the people who are in need, you know, of this. It's so important because there's so many people that can't afford to spend $200-$250 for shoes. So for me, being able to provide that for them is very important, coming from where I come from in the projects.
You know, you grew up like anybody else, you know, wanting to buy probably the next pair of sneakers that the big star wore. And it's the same thing today in the NBA with Curry and Durant and all the great players, LeBron. How does the interest in sneakers and gear compare in China to what it is and what you know in the U.S.?
Well, in China, is you know, it's not that it's like a it's a one child policy with a change. So the parents, they're able to buy the kids a pair of expensive shoes. But now with them knowing that there's a brand where you can buy those same style shoes at an affordable price, it just makes it more accessible.
When your career is over, whenever that is, where do you think you'll live?
Beijing, New York, L.A.
All three?
Yes. Tri-coastal.
Nice. Well, Steph, it's always great to talk to you, man. Good luck with the rest of the season, you know, getting back in the NBA, hopefully, and, of course, with the Starbury brand doing great things out there in China. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much. Starbury.com. Don't forget.
You got it. Starbury.com. All thanks, right. Steph.
All right. Peace.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Jeff Goodman and Stephon Marbury for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.